Creating. Marayan,
Marayan,
destroy it,
destroy it.
Mrityuna,
Mrityuna,
by death,
by death.
Antakam,
Antakam,
the Lord of death,
the Lord of death.
The eternal time factor has no beginning and no end. It is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the maker of the criminal world. It brings about the end of the phenomenal world. It carries on the work of creation by bringing one individual into existence from another. And likewise, it dissolves the universe by destroying even the Lord of Death, Yamaraj. Purport. By the influence of eternal time, which is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Father begets a Son, and the Father dies by the influence of cruel death. But by time's influence, even the Lord of cruel death is killed. In other words, all the demigods within the material world are temporary, like ourselves. Our lives last for 100 years at the most. And similarly, although their lives may last for millions and billions of years, the demigods are not eternal. No one can live within this material world eternally. The phenomenal world is created, maintained, and destroyed by the finger signal of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, a devotee does not desire anything in this material world. Devotee desires only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This servitude exists eternally. The Lord exists eternally. His servitor exists eternally, and the service exists eternally. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 29th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Explanation of Devotional Service by Lord Kapila. So, since the time factor is eternal, that which is done on the eternal platform is also eternal. So the service rendered, who the service is rendered to, and the person rendering the service, that relationship is eternal, that remains. So this is important, especially because this is balanced against the last verses of the chapter, establishing how the Lord is in control of everything, how everything runs according to his direction. We, you know, hear this, so these things can be used in many ways. Religionists will use it that, yes, see, you know, he's in control of everything, people are not working properly, so the persons of this criminal world, in other words, the criminals, then they will be punished. You know, so you have the, you know, hellfire and brimstone presentation of God consciousness, which has its place, no doubt, but that cannot be where it ends. That cannot be the reason of one's inspiration. It should be a cause of thoughtfulness, that the material world is temporary, so therefore whatever is in this world is also temporary. The reason that we're in this world is because we're not interested in serving the Lord. So therefore, that brings up fear, since he is in control, and to the degree of control that's being brought out in these verses. Previous verses establish that nothing is happening. When Prabhupada says not a blade of grass is moving without his approval, that means everything. That means, believe it or not, even the American Congress is working under the direction. They can't move their pen on the paper to sign their, the document. They can't whack the gavel on the table to start and end their meetings. The peon can't open or close the windows without the approval of the Lord. And when they walk down the aisle, their shoes don't squeak and sound like they pass air because of the Lord. Right? All that is going wrong. So that degree, it is brought out. But foolishly and atheistically, it is pointed out, Srila Prabhupada uses the term atheistically, that someone will think that it doesn't connect to the Supreme Lord. We have something that we do that doesn't connect to the Supreme Lord. This is purport in the 40th verse. Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Gyakshena Prakriti Suyate. Nature is working under my direction. The foolish person thinks that nature is working automatically, but such an atheistic theory is not supported in the Vedic literatures. Nature is working under the superintendence of the Supreme. So, and then here, all natural phenomena, everything is under his control. So the idea that we could do anything without his direction, that we would find direction somewhere else, ignoring God's direction, that would be then foolishness, atheism, actually. Generally, we don't necessarily like to use the term so strongly, but it is atheism. If you think you can create a social culture other than what God has given, if you think you can follow a lifestyle in that is not God has given, that is both atheistic and criminal. But, of course, then in that kind of a state, we become worried because then, you know, it sounds too fanatic, it sounds too heavy, this and that. Why does it sound too fanatic? It's logical. It makes perfect sense. But emotionally, it is unnerving. Why? Because we are not secure. Why aren't we secure? Because we're not doing things the way we should. Right? If you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're secure. Right? The common person walks down the street in a secure state. He's not worried that because he just walked down the street, the police are going to come and pick him up. No, but the criminal is. Criminal just goes into a shop, buys something, walks out, walks across the street, pushes a little button, waits for it to turn green. He's still in fear because at any moment someone could recognize him and come and collect him and take him away. So that fear that is there, that insecurity, that's coming from nowhere else but ourselves. Why? Because we're trying to circumvent the laws of God, which can't be done. It just can't be done. So this understanding is important so that we make the decision to commit ourselves to devotional service, to the activities as given by the Lord, as opposed to making up our own program. But it's not meant to be left as the last statement in a presentation so that everybody walks out with more fear. We're already fearful, and then walks out with more fear. Because we're fearful of what goes on in the world, birth, death, old age, and disease, our neighbors, our relatives, losing our money, everything. But we shouldn't now also be afraid of God. No, you should know that fear is coming in this world because of neglect of serving God. But that shouldn't be the final position. So we see, after having spent basically half of the chapter explaining how you can't get away from God's laws, so therefore, what does that leave you? The worship of the Lord. It doesn't leave you another alternative. So in devotional services, there isn't another alternative. It's not like there's a lot of options that you have. If you want to stay in the material world, yes, there's tons of options like that. But if you want to get out of the material world, there's only one. There's only one option. That's worship of the Supreme Lord, right, in devotional service. There isn't another option. So, having made that statement, now it comes about the point, because the point is not to be afraid and therefore one's doing all the activities and this and that. That's not the purpose. The purpose is that one will be engaged in a natural loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's the actual purpose of the material world. But we are distracted and take up the activities in this material world and take them so seriously that we don't remember this relationship with the Lord. So now if we say about the relationship with the Lord, then we may add that too. Yes, we have all what's going on. It's so nice. And now it's even better because I've added God to it. Right? So I have my nice relationship with the family and my kids and everything. My kid just, passed his exam, did very well. And, my daughter just, did her play on the stage and remembered her lines and everything. And all the other mothers, complimented my wife on how nice was the costume she made for the play. I mean, the life's great. And then we have God also. Right? So, nice, but it's all sentiment. At any moment, the whole thing can crash down as soon as it's not nice. And whose fault is it going to be? God's. Right? So this is, he's trying to bring around that there isn't something else. So that means the concept that anything else that you think of separately from God is giving you happiness. You can't do that.
You have to think of everything that it works because it's in connection with God. It's by His grace. Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he's commenting about the Lord after his disappearance to Arjuna, then he is saying that everything that we have, you know, our kingdom, our position, our wives, children, wealth, influence, everything is by the Lord's grace. Nothing is coming separate from that. Right? Does that make sense? Nothing is coming separate. So that position is actually how the devotee sees. And to see otherwise is a criminal mentality. Right? So that has to be brought out so that direction is not gone towards. To try to work out things. Well, is it a it means some will think it's a bona fide discussion on whether we follow God's laws or not. They actually will call a bona fide, authorized, so-called devotional committee to discuss whether following God's laws, following the instructions of the acharyas, is actually an option, or what are our options. Let's pursue, there's words they use for bringing out all these by discussion, you know. You look at the negative side of God's instructions and then see if, you know, what problems people have with that, and then how we can find those solutions by, you know, joining it together with some modern, fresh, new ideas. Right? You know, and so, but this is all atheism. Beginning to end. The sentiment that you want to find the truth, good. The sentiment that, you know, we have to find something that works, you know, so we can work as a group, as a community, great. But the methodology, what does it have to do with reality? God's already in control, so He doesn't need your acceptance to run things. He's already running them anyway, and it's going to run the way He says anyway. Now the point is now, do we want to work in criminal mentality so we're always looking over our shoulder and there's always a problem, so therefore we spend our life exclusively dealing with, what's it called, problem solving? Or what's that word? You know, little things that come up daily, and that's your whole absorption and management. Or do we actually look at the bigger picture, which is God's creation, how it runs, how to engage everyone according to that? Of course, many will say it's not a practical paradigm because it's so different than the criminal mentality that we've been holding since time immemorial. And to make this very big change would not be practical. But unfortunately, it's the only practical thing. You don't have an other alternative because things only work because God made them that way. As you say, God made little green apples and they're sour. They are not something else. You can depend that a little green apple will be sour. You know it will be. Why? Because God made it that way. You don't have to worry that you'll bite into your little green apple and it'll taste like a kumquat or something. You know, it'll always be sour like a little green apple. Right? So you don't have to, or worse, maybe a durian. You always have to worry, yeah, is this fruit going to taste like a, you know, what it looks like, or is it going to taste like a durian? You know, you may have that problem. But it works because God's laws are there. So now, to get us away from any concept other than you have no alternative other than following it, but then the point is because the jiva, his nature is that of voluntary work. So then that voluntary work is brought out. Why do we voluntarily do anything? Of course, we do things because of fear, but as soon as the fear is not there, we won't do it anymore. Right? But if affection is there, then no matter what the situation, we will do that. Right? So then it ends with this point, is therefore the devotee not desiring everything up here, not being caught up in things here in the temporary, but sees everything in connection to the Lord. So his endeavors in this way are eternal. That person he's worshiping is eternal, so we don't have to worry it will go away. And the ourselves, we are eternal. So it's not that the situation will change and then again we have to start all over. So it ends on a sweet note. That's the whole point, is that the final point is that attractiveness of Krishna consciousness is the actual driving method, is actually what makes it interesting, what we're become excited about. Fear is only just to so that we will drop our stubborn habit of just acting on the mundane platform, where we demand that the material energy is the foremost consideration. When we see the situation we're in, we're just being practical. So when we say time, place, and circumstance, what does that mean? What is that devotee thinking of when he says time, place, and circumstance? He's thinking of what I can see with my eyes, what I can smell with my nose, touch with my hands, hear with my ears, and taste with my tongue. Right? And there may be some economic or political or possibly, you know, family attachment, other elements thrown into that mix. But is it that this situation, no matter what it is, where it is, it's controlled by the Supreme Lord and it acts under His laws? If that was the vision, would a devotee ever bring up an option other than God's direction? So the question should be how to apply God's direction, not is it applicable? Very different discussion. Just as intellectually stimulating. And amazingly enough, way more practical. Because it can actually be done. Anything other than that cannot be effective. It actually cannot be effective. And therefore, committee after committee after committee after committee has sat, made resolutions, and still nothing happens. Right? Why? Because if you don't consider God's laws, if the situation doesn't mean how does God's laws control this, then all your plans, everything, none of them can work. It just can't. It just won't work. So that is the difficulty. That is the difficulty, is that this Krishna means here in the Bhagavatam here, Kapila Muni's gone to great lengths to point out that in every atom, between every atom, is how far Krishna's gone in everything. So there's no question of not including Him. If we try, we will fail. Therefore, when we consider Him, then all good can happen. That's the only way good can happen. And the whole point that Krishna's pointing this out is that it's not because He wants us to be afraid. He wants us to be cured of the material disease. Just like the mother wants to relate with the child in their natural, loving, and spontaneous relationship. But that can't be done while the child is sick and just laying there moaning and groaning. So medicine is given. So is that medicine necessarily so wonderful and nice? Not necessarily. It may not be that great. But, nobody likes it, but it's what works. So this kind of presentation we may not like, but it is what works. It is what works. So it becomes very clear, but we have to take it far enough. The difficulty is we'll have something, we'll have an idea, have an inspiration, but we won't take it far enough that it actually reaches the lotus feet of the Lord. And because of that, there's trouble. There will have to be trouble. So we have to see then that whatever we're doing, it has to be taken to that degree. You know, Bhaktivinoda, of course, says no thought has a problem. No action is completely useless. The difficulty is that it hasn't been taken far enough. If it's of interest to the living entity is a person, right? People, they're interested in relationship. In relationship, they're going to interact. So that's the whole purpose of the cosmic creation, is relationship and interaction based on that. But if we don't take this understanding of relationship to the lotus feet of the Lord, means actually either in full sentiment or in proper mechanics, then it falls short and it will be a problem. So therefore is that the living entity can only think of things within the sphere of, you know, relationship. So therefore, as a basis, no thought is a problem, really, completely. The problem is that it doesn't go far enough. It stops. Then you want everyone should be equal. Great. But where does that equality start? Stop. Where does everyone actually become equal? Right? On the transcendental platform. So if we stop anywhere before that, then we run into the problem. If everyone is equal, then, you know, the elephant should have equal voting rights also. You know, maybe it can't talk, but, you know, that's our shortcoming. You know, we haven't made the endeavor to really get to know the elephant and learn, you know, its, you know, what it's speaking and what its meaning and all that. You know what I'm saying? There's always going to be a problem unless it goes all the way to Krishna. Everything. Whatever it is you want, great. But it has to go through the whole process. So we see Prabhupada again and again is bringing this out. He explains the mechanics of it and everything, but each time he does it, he doesn't go through the whole thing. He explains different parts of different places. We're supposed to contemplate and put them together. Right? That's the point of engaging the intelligence. That's the point of a sadhu sangha, is discussing about the Lord. But the point is since the ultimate goal is the Lord, then that sweetness of attraction to the Lord, interaction with the Lord, that love for the Lord, that's the eternal platform. That's the actual position we end up on. So it becomes very nice. So here then he's ending this chapter, you know, on a note that one can be very inspired. That one can understand that everything can be done in connection with the Lord, and that's actually what's going to make us happy. And not only happy, we're going to be eternally happy. Everything else we do know is temporary. We don't want it to be, but we know it is. You know, we know it is. We know the moment should last forever, but after that moment has been lasting for a while, then we want to go do something else. We're thirsty and we want to go check in the fridge what's there. You know, it's the reality. It just happens. Right? So, okay. Any questions on this? Yes.
You said that only God system will work.
Yes. Okay, so if we're supposed to apply God's laws, then that means we'd have to apply Varnashram Dharma. Interesting that that's the first point that comes up, is that's generally what we're trying to avoid in all our discussions about the situation like that. So here, I say, it's, what do you call it? The unspoken truth. There's terms for these things, you know, unconscious. And so then how do we know what our Varna is? Okay. I mean, one is you have mechanics. It's very simple. Like, how do you understand your ashram? So as easy it is to understand your ashram, it's that easy to understand the varna. Problem is because of the modern bourgeois culture, this list of a line of authority is actually a problem. It goes back to the Greeks, the Ionians, like that, is that they came up with this idea of these elements of equality, democracy, and not worrying about the traditions, authority. So they shifted, they planted the seed that shifted authority from the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, then down basically to the Vaishyas and Shudras. Vaishyas means, we talk about Shudras, actually it means Vaishyas, because Vaishyas want the Shudras to think they're doing something, because then you can make economics work, right? Unless the market has, you know, volume and depth, then you don't make money. Right, so unless a lot of people are involved in it with a lot of money, nothing happens, right? So that's why then, because the Shudras won't figure that out, and the Vaishyas do. So all this talk, we always hear about the bourgeois. Bourgeois aren't the Shudras. The bourgeois are wealthy people that come into power not because of their knowledge or their influence, but because of money, right? So it goes beyond the elements of tradition and knowledge, which is fine. Vedic culture, you do have wealthy people do have this, but to take that as the exclusive, that's more of a modern thing. Of course, the Ionians were some thousands of years ago, like that. I think it was about 2,500 years or something. But the point is, it's establishing. So because of this, then we have some inherent misgivings on social strata. So because of this, then the problem comes, this Shudra is a problem. But in the Vedic culture, they don't have that problem. Everybody's seen for who they are and can do what they can do. So let's say you have something like this. Arjuna, he's in the heavenly planets. He's sitting with his father and on his throne. And the apsaras are dancing for them. And the apsaras are doing their dance, and the apsaras have a tendency to not wear that much on the upper part of their body when they're doing performances. And so in that group is Urvasi, and so Arjuna is watching Urvasi. And so later on, then by the arrangement of Indra, then Urvasi and Arjuna meet. Now, we can see here, one, she's a lady, two, she's an apsara, three, as an apsara, she's basically a public figure in the way of the more freedom of her feminine charms being available for all and sundry, right? So now that would put one socially not in a very good position, right? By the modern think, on one level. But when Arjuna met her, he was very reverential to the point it made her angry. Because she comes in their line. Right? Going way, way back, then she is the mother of many of the great heroes in their line. So even though she is an apsara, a society girl, he still reveres her for her position. Right? Common girl on the street, maybe not, but for someone who has outstanding qualities. So one's qualities and nature are what is appreciated. Vidura is a Shudra, but he's the prime minister of the kingdom because of his qualification, not because he's a Shudra, not because equity, or not because there was some, what do you call that? Where they keep a certain number of places reserved.
Quotas.
Yeah, there's no quotas that, okay, Dhritarashtra, well, we've got to have, you know, X amount of sutras in our cabinet, so who can we do? What about Vidura, you know, he's technically a sutra. Yeah, good idea. Keep it in family, you know. That, it wasn't that, he's qualified. Right? We've heard the names Gopal Bhatt or Tenali Ram. They were the court jesters. But they were so smart, they became the prime ministers. And because of that, their kings were undefeatable. Right? Akbar was, you know, one of the most powerful kings in India in modern times. He could not defeat Krishna Deva Rai, whose prime minister was Tenali Ram. A court jester. Right? Kalidas, he was a goat herder. And he's still known today as one of the greatest Sanskrit literates in India. So understanding that is for what you have. You'll be known for your qualities, not for your position. The position simply defines what you do. It doesn't define your how people interact with you in specific. You understand? So if these things can be gotten beyond, in other words, if people can actually use their finer brain cells that they've gotten from drinking so much milk, right? Then one would be able to appreciate the fine points in Varnashram. It has much more consideration than any modern system. Modern systems are actually pretty shallow. Right? Because we see it doesn't work. Communism is for the people, of the people, by the people, for the people. But who ran the people, the place? The people? No, those guys in their nice long black limos that, you know, sit around in the Kremlin. So they were exactly doing the same thing that the Tsar was doing before. What's the difference? Right? There's no difference. What was the difference between Louis XVI and Napoleon? No difference. What was the difference between Stalin and the Tsar? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that you had the Kaiser, then you had Hitler. What's the difference? So that's the point, is the modern systems don't actually work on their own. Right? They only work in how close they are to the eternal laws given by God. So we have to go back to those eternal laws. That's one thing. Another thing is one is play varnasha means it addresses your particular conditioned nature. So that means your conditioned nature should be able to function according to its actual position. In other words, everyone should have the right to pursue a lifestyle that is actually in line with their nature. And no one else should be able to stop that. Right? So that's actually what Varnashram does. It is actually the most liberal system, because the other systems make you get to do what you want as long as you do what everybody else does. So that they make a classless society where there's only one option, and therefore everybody, as long as they do that, it works. But how is that addressing the individual? Right? How is that addressing the individual that everybody actually has to be the same? Then it'll work. So all they've done is change from this same to that same. What's the difference? Like Prabhupada says, you have the boil on your right knee, you pray, may it be shifted to my left knee. It doesn't get rid of the problem. So varnashram means that there's eight positions in human life that need to be addressed. And everything in human society, all its needs and desires and interactions are all contained within our subsections of those eight. There's nothing left out. God's pretty intelligent. So having put everything into that, then it's a matter of how does each one of those pursue their own nature at the same time, don't step on the rights of another nature. So the Varnashram system is simply defining who you are, who everyone else is, and how do you interact with them so you get what you want and you don't disturb what they want. Now, I haven't heard of any other system that is that scientific. You know, on the inherent generic nature.
From the internet.
From the internet. So, does this make some sense? So, if you're starting from there, then you can actually do something with Varnashram, because you understand it's inherent. There are generic natures of something. Just like if a horse trainer can train any horse, because all horses have a generic nature, then each horse is an individual within that. Does that make sense? So that means there's a generic nature of human being. And all human things can be resolved within the Varnashram system. Right? And then each position within the Varnashram system has a generic nature. And so within the human position, within the human nature, within the particular position of Varnashram, everyone can find their actual position. Right? And so any questions that we have should not be questions of doubt upon the system's working, but should be a questions on doubt of our understanding or understanding how to apply it. There's a difference. If we bring up, okay, that's nice that we're born into good families that, you know, have a tradition, but we're, you know, from mixed background, we're the Varnashankar that Arjuna talks about in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So how do we fit in? You have to understand that doesn't mean, oh, we can't follow Varnashram. It means that you have to contemplate a little bit more, that's all. You know, modern man prides himself on his intellect and the ability to think and contemplate, his critical thinking from an objective point of view. But unfortunately, that's the very position that the modern man absolutely cannot do. Modern cannot think critically, especially of itself. It cannot think in the objective point, because objective means God's view. Anything else other than that is subjective. So how to actually see our position according to the way God sees it. Then we take into it our specific, as a person, our specifics of our nature. Combining that, then you can actually come up with something in Varnashram. Otherwise, one will not. If one approaches it simply as a political and economic forum, we'll never get anywhere, because that's not what it's based on. The nature is not politics, is an application within nature. It's a kind of nature. Politics is used by the kings to maintain the, or establish or maintain Varnashram. But it's not the principles of nature that is worth that it is, how you say, it represents. You know what I'm saying? Brahman has a nature. That's Dharma. Right? Kshatriya has a nature. Vaishya, Shudra, they all have natures. Inherent. You can't change them. Right? Then, and if you see a change, means you're seeing something external. You haven't gone deep enough to understand actually what makes the nature. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, we'll come, well, what about, you know, a Brahmin who, you know, does music or, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? You can go on unlimitedly with such exceptions, but knowing that the principle of exception is created by God. We forget this point. God created the principle of exception. And the exception still works by God's rules. But they work slightly different than the mainstream of it. So the basic rule always applies. The exception applies if it applies. But it still applies according to the rules. Right? So, in general, until one has a proper philosophical understanding of Varnashram, then there's no even use really in approaching the practical details. Because if you don't have an understanding of it, have a faith in it, you'll never understand it anyway. You'll just find, the more you study it, the more you'll find more and more doubts why you shouldn't. That's all. You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't understand how it works, it doesn't make sense. Right? Because the point is every living entity is unique. And within themselves are unique because within their own selves they have contradictory natures, let alone within the contradictory natures within the variety of human society. So that means you have to have a system that accommodates all that contradiction. And there's only one person that can work all that out, and that's God. So since everything comes from Him, that means all conflict is resolved in Him. And unless you understand that point, you will never be able to manage Varnashram. Because you have to be able to work simultaneously with things that are contradictory and have no problem with them because you've resolved it in God. You can't do that. There's no use even approaching it. Don't even bother. Don't even pick up your little piece of paper that's sitting on your table around your conference table to discuss it because you'll never understand it. You have no interest. It's like the bee on the outside of the bottle. Until you open the jar, there's no honey to taste. So until you've understood the philosophical and cultural methods by which human society works, and human society is a lot higher than Mleccha-Yavana culture. So that means with the Mleccha brain, you'll never be able to understand human life. Because human life is Varnashram. Not that it's maybe Varnashram. Human life is Varnashram. And Varnashram is the, the science of human life. They're non-different. Right? They're non-different. So until one sees that, one will never be able to deal with it. You understand? So that's where we have to start. Otherwise, as far as mechanics go, it's like this. Just as, okay, are you not married and studying? Okay? If that answer is yes, you're a brahmachari. If you're married and studying, you're a grihastha. Right? Or if you're married and not studying, you're still a grihastha, right? If you've been, you know, connected with the grihastha ashram or not, but your purpose is pulling yourself out of material attachments by not putting too much emphasis on economic development or, you know, political politics or all these different kinds of things, and sadhana is more prominent in your life, but you can interface with a grihastha society like that. That's a vanaprastha. If you position yourself so you're indifferent whether you're, you know, in grihastha society or not, something's nice or not, that's sannyas. So anybody can understand what position they're in very easily. So in the same way, varna is just as easy. But this is where, the other one everybody's comfortable with. This other one will, you know, put people on edge. It's like this. You have the common, sudra means the common people. So to ask the question, do we need sudras, it's not intelligent. Sudra means the common man. The sudra is, it basically is everybody. Right? When you walk down the street in London, you're looking at sudras. Right? You're looking at sudras. Are you looking at, you know, the professors at the university and stuff? You know? Are you looking at the people who are managing London or the country? Are you looking at the guy who runs Marks and Spencer's that you're standing in front of, or maybe Harrods or across the street? Are you looking at them? No. Then now and again when they walk by, but you're looking at everybody else. So that's the first point of position. A shudra doesn't mean the bottom of the barrel, because shudra means everybody. The common, just the natural, the citizens. And remember, shudra is above malecha. So when a malecha looks at varnashram, they better be looking straight up. If they're looking any other direction, they're misunderstanding their position as malechas. And if they're opposing varnashram, that puts them into a more unique category that's called yavana. Yavana means one who opposes the Vedic culture. Like that. So now think about that next time you bring up, is varnashram actually for us? That's what yavana said. Right? So now shudra is up. Shudra is a gentleman. Shudra is a human being. And that means then the dvijas are even more developed and refined than that. Right? So now you wouldn't mind dealing with a gentleman. The whole society was a gentleman. You'd be happy. And then if there are people above that are more enlightened than that, who wouldn't have a problem with that? Who would have a problem with such a society? Okay, so now within the general populace, then you have the leaders of society. Right? Because the general populace, everything's going on. People, you know, they need food, they need this, facilities. So that's all going on by the interaction. But who is creating that? So there are people who are expert at economics. They know how to, from the facilities there that are there amongst the common people, to generate economics, create the money necessary for the system to work. So those are the leaders in economics. Those are Vaishyas. Right? So if you know how to do that, that makes you a Vaishya. If you know how to generate out of, you know, just something that is seeming common and make it into money, you're a Vaishya. You can do that. You're a leader in economics. If you know how to take the environment and create protection for the whole society so that everybody therefore can perform their activities within it, the Brahmins, Vaishyas, and Shudras. So you know how to interact with people to create an administration and therefore control society for the protection of everyone and to see that everyone is cared for and able to function within your position. That's a Kshatriya. And if your basis is knowledge of the Shastra. So all you do is study Shastra, teach Shastra. That's everything about what you do. Anything in connection with your life is connected with that. That's the foundation of it, no matter what the subject is. But the scripture itself and the tradition based on that, that's a Brahma. Right? So with that easy understanding, it's either your basis is knowledge and teaching. Your basis is protection. Your basis is, you know, and that doesn't mean, you know, it'll be very good for your, you know, good for your health to, you know, pay us a little bit of money. We're not talking that kind of protection. Right? Or you know how to generate funds. Right? If you know those three, then you know where to position yourself. If you don't know those three, but you know how to assist in those three, that puts you in the fourth category. So it's not rocket science to understand varna. It's the simplest thing in the world. Just generally devotees are deathly afraid of it because they don't want to be labeled a shudra. That's all. That's the bottom line. No one minds going, oh, well, that makes me a bike. Oh, that makes you a shuttle. That makes you. No one minds. Oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. That's clear. It's everybody else. It's they don't want to be the shudra. And then we forget, shudras can be highly intelligent. Just to give some examples of some shudras that we may not think of in that way. Policemen are shudras. They're shudras for the administration. They see to the law and order. Like that. Your secretaries in your government offices that know how to control huge tracts of land and all that. And big, huge, they're shudras. A governor is a shudra. Right? That's how, you know, our man from Germany could be governor for California. You understand? It's not actually. Someone say, "Well, you know, he's a you know a weightlifter." No, he's a movie star. No, he's a governor. You know, he's a, it's like a, you know, it's because it's the same varna, just different aspects. Just like a person could do business in one thing, and if that doesn't work, he could do business in another thing. He could do cloth. He could do steel. He could do cars. He knows business. So that's why it works. A governor of a state is that will take, oh no, they're Kshatriyas. No, they're not. They're shudras. Because they're working under a higher authority. You understand? So this is that. You go down to Marks and Spencer's, there's 10,000 people working in that place. And there probably is still only a handful, one or two or three people who are Vaishyas. Everyone else in there. The guys that manage the business are shudras. The guy that comes out of Harvard School of Business Management with an MBA is a good chance he's a shudra. If he was from a Vaishya family and he's doing that for prestige so they can tell all their other relatives, hey, he's got an MBA from Harvard, and I go, then he may be a Vaishya. So if he goes out, starts his own business, he's a Vaishya. If he goes out and comes in with his, you know, $100,000 you know, a month salary, he's a shudra. Because if you come back after 30 years, he'll still be doing that. Well, the guy that came into the business as, you know, the peon, the errand runner in the company, you check now, he's the CEO. Not the guy with the MBA. So much of what goes on in society, it's all shudras. So it's not a problem being a shudra. It just defines how you deal with your boss. That's all. If you're the shudra and he's the vaishya, then that means you have to work in such a way that he's happy. He's happy, you get paid. He's not happy, you don't get paid. Pretty straightforward. That's what varnashram is for. You know, the Vaishya can complain all he wants about the Kshatriya, but the Kshatriya is creating the environment in which he can do business. No king, no business. You look at any country where they're having all the civil war and all that, there is no business going on. Why? Because it's not a safe environment. And the economies where they have more money is because there's more safety. You understand? So, therefore, there's a limit. That's why a Kshatriya is higher than the Vaishya, because he creates the environment. The Vaishya creates the environment for the Shudra. And the Brahmin, without Brahmins, you don't have Kshatriyas. So, to go into Varnashram and say, we're going to establish Varnashram, and you start with carrots in a field, you'll never do it. You have to start with Brahmins. Brahmins only can make Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas only can create the protection society that Vaishyas feel enthusiastic to invest in. And shudras are already there. You don't have to create a shudra. You have to create a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya. So if someone wants to be them, that means you have to get trained. So just we'll just do it out of the hat, just like that. That means that's shudra brain. Brahmin brain means if we want to step, we have to train. Chanakya Pandit, he needed a king. So he went out, found someone who's capable, and trained him. That's why Chandragupta Maurya was great because he had Chanakya. Yudhishthir has his Brahmins. Everyone, if you go to them, they're who they are because of their Brahmins. Right? Dasarath, you know, their Brahmin, right? It was Vishishta. Right? Like that. Yudhishthira in the Bhagavatam, so many times Narad Muni is coming and instructing him. So Kshatriyas are only who they are because of Brahmins. So, and you can't create the political system without Kshatriyas. And you can't create them without Brahmins. That's why Prabhupada again and again says that the purpose of this movement is to establish Brahmins. Because if you have Brahmins, you'll make everything else. So a devotee can either function on that platform because he inherently has the conditioned nature of one. He just has to scrub it off a bit, you know, a lot of thick layers of stuff. Or he can function on that as a devotee, and a devotee doesn't doubt God's system. You know what I'm saying? You can't have your cake and eat it too. It didn't work for Marie Antoinette. It's not going to work for anyone else. You know what I'm saying? You can't order a devotee, therefore, above Varnashram at the same time, then that, you know, doubt the whole system of God's laws. Because the point is, if you're above Varnashram, then remember, that means you're above Grihastha life too, because it's part of Varnashram. Hello. You know? So therefore, the devotee who can say we're above Varnashram is the one who's not married and is not interested in any position or anything, and everybody knows it. It's obvious. The women know this is a celibate. And they'll all contest to it. You know, and everybody else, he's not interested in politics, he tries nothing like that. He's just absorbed in the holy name and preaching and this and that. That devotee can say, we don't, you know, Varnashram is not my concern. But if you're married and you've got your, you know, 3 months of little well-coiffed hair on your head, then you better be worried about Varnashram. You better be worried about Varnashram. Otherwise, you're actually not as intelligent as you think. And you're professing atheism, which at some time is going to come around and bite you in the backside. You know, it's going to get you. You can't get away from God's law. Does that make sense? So in other words, we gave the 30-second answer to your question, but it's only understandable with that other, you know, 40-minute yes. Most devotees just have a regular job. So when they're at the regular job, how can they act as a Brahmin, as a Kshatriya, as the Vaishya? How do they have to act at that job? The temple president of Alachua has a job. How does he have to act at that job? As a Shudra? He has to act like a Shudra. You're missing the point. This is why Varnashram cannot be understood. Because Varnashram simply means some cotton string or not. You think God's so shallow? Varnashram is a bunch of cotton string. You have enough cotton string, then you're this. And if you don't, then you're that. You know what I'm saying? Why do they receive Brahman initiation? Because they receive it because of being devotees. It doesn't mean that they're Brahminical by their conditioned nature. So in other words, why do you think there's Varna and Ashram? Right? In the discussion, we just dropped the whole concept of Ashram and Brahminical culture. So all we discuss is Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. And because we don't want Shudras, so that means Kshatriya and Vaishya. Why? Because that's where all the power is and all the money is. So what more do we need? Right? So the weakness is that the Varna is social. It's a social designation. Ashram is spiritual. So therefore, because of their position in ashram, as devotees, they're getting it. Because of the chanting of the holy name, then they purify themselves that they can appreciate Pancharatra. And because of Pancharatra, then they get the initiation. Not because they're necessarily inherently Brahmins or Gwijas. That system you can only use within the Gurukul. Because kids are coming in, they're born according to Garbhadhan, they're this and that, so therefore you can see their conditioned nature without the devotional commitment. But for a first generation, basically, you can uncover you know, the underlying nature is because of the devotional service. Otherwise, it's so covered and mixed up. But it can be unraveled if you understand the system. If you don't, you'll never be able to. Then it's about, oh, but he's wearing the thread, you know, like that. You know, that unknown to people that the dwijas wear Brahman threads. That means Brahman, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. They all go through the reformatory rite because they're all living the lifestyle of the Brahman. They may not follow the occupation, but they follow the lifestyle. So they're all clean. They all follow the Vedic, you know, principles and all these different nice things that they do. They all have that. Only the Shudras don't. Right? You understand? And what's interesting is the Stapati, right? The one who designs deities, carves deities, does all that. They're Shudras, but they wear a Brahman thread. Because they're initiated into the particular Veda from the Stapana aspect so that they can deal with the deities and deal with the Shastra because they have to read the verses in Sanskrit. So they know Sanskrit. They have to speak Sanskrit to be a good Stapati. They have to know all the Shastra on proportions. Because if you don't do the proportions right, you end up not having good proportions yourself in the future life. Right? So you have to get your proportions right. Right? And so they're dealing, all they deal with is scripture and deities. But they're Shudras. And they wear a thread. But they're the only Shudra that wears a thread. You know what I'm saying? And you want to discuss a deity, you call him in. He's a Shudra. You know, you're the big Vaishya, big king, a big Brahmin. And you want a deity, then you say, well, I'd like a, you know, he'll ask what kind of deity you look. I was thinking, you know, this particular deity in this kind of form. He'll tell you what's bona fide. You can't say, well, I'm the Brahmin. Who are you? You're a Shudra. You can't tell me. No, that's his authority. He knows that. The Brahmin, if he doesn't know music, he has to ask the Shudra about music because he knows. This is the whole problem. We think we follow this, you know, Machiavellian idea of authority. But that's not Vedic. You're the boss, therefore you're boss of everything. I am the administrator, so I know everything. Like that. But no, you know how to manage, and you create the environment in which Brahmins, Vaishyas, and Shudras can prosper. And therefore, if you're working in an area that you yourself aren't necessarily expert in, then you would be smart if you asked. Otherwise, we don't like these rubber stamp gurus or, you know, like this, but we are very happy with rubber stamp temple presidents and other authorities. Simply because you got the rubber stamp, now you know everything? Hello? You know what I'm saying? So it's not reasonable, it's very inconsistent. So the point is they're wearing a Brahmin thread because they follow a Brahminical lifestyle, so they're initiated into the Brahminical lifestyle, but how he makes his money as Varna is a Shudra. But because we're devotees, when he goes to the temple, since the temple is not run on Varna, it's run on spiritual qualification, he may be the one giving the class or doing the yajna. You understand? This is why Varnashrama is unable to be understood by modern man. He thinks himself so broad-minded, but his narrowness is even smaller than a keyhole. You know? Like that. So he can't put these things down. Being practical. Vedic is, there's nothing more practical than Vedic. It just is easy for them to say it's not because they don't want to spend the time to understand it. Because at the present point, it's beyond their conditioned nature. But because they're devotees and they're smart, they could easily understand it if they just accept it. I can't understand somebody if I don't like him and don't accept him. As soon as I accept him, then I can understand him as a person. So until we accept it, we'll never understand. You understand? So that means in Varna, it's not ideal. Now, for someone who is such a person, and he gives the classes, does the yajnas and all that, better he has a Brahminical occupation. Better. You know, in Varna. But if he can't, then it works. It's not recommended, but it works. It's what's going on. It's what basically 99.9% of our devotees are doing anyway. So why do the ostrich thing, you know, and then say, oh, you know, something else? Because they are. Most everybody makes their money as Shudras. Most. You know what I'm saying? The guy you go 20 years ago, he was in Alachua selling stickers. You come back 20 years later, he's still selling stickers. Right? But now, 20 years ago, there was another devotee who was selling stickers. Come back 20 years later, he's running a sticker business that the devotees who are selling stickers buy from. Who's the Vaishya? Right. You understand? Unless the other one is just a very small scale Vaishya and that's all the bhikkhu can do, then that's okay. That's fine. But a salesman is a Shudra. Unless he's a Vaishya that can't get anyone else to help him because he can't make that much money. And so he does the sales himself. Because it's his business. Same thing with Vaishya. So he still has to run those according to the laws of how a Vaishya works. He has to buy the stickers cheaper than he sells them. He has to find a market where his stickers will be appreciated. And once he gets the money, he has to reinvest in more stickers. Right? And then what's left after that, then he can do something with. If he doesn't do that, that's not working on that. Then you'll be doing something outside of the Vaishya nature and you won't make money. If you're an administrator, you don't protect the people under you, your management will fail. If you go back in history, why different temple presidents or leaders aren't in their position and why devotees weren't satisfied, it'll come back to one thing, lack of protection. As simple as that. You know what I'm saying? Occasionally you have something very nice, everyone was comfortable, felt protected, but they were very bad with money and so they had to be removed. But technically you don't have to remove it, you just have to put in some of the money in your accounts and manage the money. But, you know, because of our all-encompassing, if you're on the top of the pile, you know everything and you're the boss of everything, therefore then we'll remove such a temple president when we shouldn't. We should put someone in there that deals with money. Because the Vedic system is, the Brahmins are the top of the pile, but they don't manage the thing. The Kshatriyas do. They're the top of the pile. So the buck starts with them and ends with them. They get the glory, they get the infamy. Not the Brahmins. They give credit to the Brahmins. The Brahmins don't try to take it. The Brahmin gave an idea to a Kshatriya. If the Kshatriya does it, it's his idea and he gets the credit for it. The Brahmin can't claim, well, it was my idea. That's not a Brahmin. Brahman is, that's what the Shastra says, you tell it to them, they use it, that's their own intelligence, that's their own commitment. They've done it, they get the credit. If they don't follow it and it goes wrong, they get the blame. Therefore, committees. Nobody gets the blame. You understand? So you can see is that the inherent misgivings of the modern man makes it very difficult for him to accept varnashram, because then he actually has to take responsibility for his own life. And in that way, if he wants to lead in any way, and the responsibility of others. Not just he has the position and power, but he has to take responsibility for everyone that position and power falls upon. And modern man is not willing to do that. Therefore, he likes to hide behind committees and having discussions and saying God's laws don't work. You know, it sounds good for amongst themselves, and it keeps them busy, and I've seen them busy for the last 30 years now, but it doesn't actually do anything. You understand? Varna is that is how what you have to do. If you're the Vaishya, you have to make profit. You have to take care of those under you. You don't take care, you don't make profit. Right? That's why Japanese generally make more money than anybody else, because they take care of their people. They're loyal to the company. Everybody else just uses them. Right? So they're more close to the Vaishya principles. That's why they do better. And amazingly, Americans have had to learn from them. You know, I hope I wasn't too blasphemous to make that statement. But, you know, because they're closer to the Vaishya ideal. And they have to give tax. Otherwise, how are the Kshatriyas going to provide the facilities to keep them safe? And they have to give charity to the Brahmins. Otherwise, artha comes from dharma. Unless they're performing dharma, how are they going to get artha? So you put that on. So these old, wealthy families, traditionally, they give a lot of money in charity. Tons. They know they have to give it in charity. The nouveau riche try not to. They have it for a little while, then they lose it all. Why? Because how long can artha last without dharma? So it's a science on how the system works. Who's connected to who? What is the relationship? And what one does in the system? That's what it is. It's the science of that. You know, it's like saying the book on telling how the machine works. You know, we don't necessarily have to follow it. We can put the bolts and nuts together any way we like, and it'll work. You know what I'm saying? I want to plug the plug not into the electric socket in the wall. I want to put it into something, you know, that's you know, more, like how you say, artificial and all that. I would rather put it in some, you know, drop it into a bowl of very, and then the bowl should also be, you know, made out of wood or something, or it's porcelain made by, you know, some poor villagers and, you know, in you know, how you say, in some Chinese province and that, and the profits are going back into social work before them. And then it's in that bowl will be, you know, apples that have been grown in an organic way, you know, by also villagers who have a co-op and are, you know, doing their own self-improvement and all that. And I ground it, you know, by hand and all that without using this modern machinery. So I'd rather put the plug into that. Wouldn't that would be much nicer than this artificial, you know, multinational, you know, raping of the earth, you know, electric plug and system that they're all using. Is it going to work? No. So even though it's well meant, well thought out, it still is not going to work. And it's that stupid, that foolish, what devotees are trying to do by trying to circumvent Varnashram and God's laws. It's that foolish. They won't agree, they'll consider themselves very intelligent, but you take each point by point, it can be easily shown that they have no idea what they're talking about. You understand? So it's very important that you understand, if you're going to understand Varnashram, that's simply what you do. If you're the Vaishya now and you run a business, do you have to pay tax? Yes. Do you have to take care of the people in your company? Yes. You have to make it, you have to work in a market that you're going to make money in. Do you have to be selling goods that are, you know, you work in that market? Do you have to be using prices that will be competitive? Yes. So that's all considerations because you're a Vaishya. You can say, well, I'm a Brahmin, you know, we're above all this. We don't have to do all that. Will you make money? No. So that's the whole point is Varna simply means so you know who you are and what you have to do to make money in your thing. Brahmins make money because they're Brahmins. Kshatriyas make money because they're Kshatriyas. Vaishyas make because they're Vaishyas. Shudras make because they're Shudras. If they try to do something else, they will not make money. You understand? So even if, let's say, you're a Kshatriya and you have to do Vaishya activity, fine. But you still have to do that Vaishya activity like a Vaishya does it. But you can have higher principles, Brahminical culture, so maybe your standards of morals may be higher than a common Vaishya. But that's your personal life, that's your own spiritual development, that's ashram. But your Varna is going to work by what it is, right on the table. It's not difficult. It's only difficult because people don't want to accept it, that's all. It's very straightforward and scientific. We have to remember, God thought it up. You know, and he's generally, no, we see, he went to Guru school, he did really good. He learned one subject in one day, and he learned all of them. Like that. So we have to at least give him credit for being smart. Right? And he's been around since time immemorial. So he's been thinking about this. He has the time to think about it. Prabhupada said it's a problem, disease of modern man, no time. Right? He wrote an article in his early DTGs, no time. No one has time for spiritual thought. GDC, it can sit down and discuss a philosophical point that, you know, has a problem in the whole society. And let's say, like, reinitiation or something like that is still plaguing the society after, you know, 20 years. Why? Because they won't sit down and discuss it until they all understand it and they can walk out of the room and say one thing. Now, 30 of them walk out of the room, they 30 say 30 things. And so there's confusion. And if you ask them, why don't we discuss it long enough? No time. So God's not like that. God has time. God is time. So he's thought of it very nicely. He has presented it. And it works. Anybody who has followed it, it worked. Anybody who followed it said it didn't work, didn't follow it. It's that simple. I'm not sure if we should. Time, I don't know if everybody has time. He's all serious. I'm thinking I'll end the class now, and you can stay after we do another half an hour of questions, if you're comfortable with that. Yeah, so then we'll end now, and after 5 minutes, start more questions if you like. Grantorai Shimad Bhagavatam Ki. Because what he's meaning here, your duty means according to your conditioned nature. What actually is the way you think. right? So that's what we thought before. Do you think according to knowledge? Do you think according to Dharma? Do you think according to economics? Or do you think according to expression? So therefore, that defines what you are, not exactly what you can be expert at. Because like, let's say an artist, he can be expert in any art, right? And someone, you find many times, it's like, it's a very common thing, you find someone, let's say, is a well-known actor. They're also, many times, very expert in, let's say, some kind of exotic cooking. Or, you know, they're very expert in interior decoration or fashion. You know, so the point is they understand principles on which it functions so they can work within it. But their basis of doing it is still going to be that of an artist. So that's why it's better to do your own duty, is that even if you can do something else very expertly, better you do that. You know, it's just like, let us say, that's more obvious that it's something different, but let's take something that is actually not different, which is more the case. Let's take Dronacharya as an example. Dronacharya is a Brahmin and a very qualified one, and he is very expert at the martial science. So he knows it. He can teach it to the Kshatriyas, because the Kshatriyas need to know it. It's his interest as an area of knowledge. So he knows the science according to the tradition, you know, according to the Shastra. So he can teach that. Teach a Kshatriya how to be a Kshatriya, how to use it as a Kshatriya, and all that. So him running the Gurukul in which the Pandavas and all the kings of the world were taught, that's him doing his duty as a Brahmin. But now when he's on the battlefield in Kshetra, Kurukshetra, and fighting as a Kshatriya, it's the same science. But now he's not doing the duties of a Brahmin, he's doing the duties of a Kshatriya. And even though he can do that better than anyone there except Bhishma, like that, then it's still not ideal. He could be a better general than anybody there except Bhishma, but better he doesn't. Because it's not according to his nature. So it's only out of his obligation to Duryodhana, and Duryodhana, you know, when it comes to the Pandavas, doesn't mind crossing the line, then better he doesn't. Like that. So that's much more of the things, you know, or see like a Vaishya. I've heard Vaishyas tell this to me, is that their father, but as they're growing up and, you know, their business acumen was developing and they were being trained for the business, or they were already running the business, but they hadn't started like on their own yet, or, you know, doing that kind of, coming to that level, then the father would tell them, and says, you know, in our family line, in our tradition, we will not do business in meat products or leather, like that. So it's not that they couldn't do a great job, you know, running a slaughterhouse, making money, or dealing in leather products or stuff, but they won't do it. So that's doing his own duty, because the own duty that goes finer within it, because then even within that, your Vaishya, and then what kind of Vaishya, what kind of Kshatriya, what kind of, because there's different natures within that. Like we see Janaka Rishi is a Kshatriya who, you know, patronizes the arts and the Brahmins and, you know, creates peace in the society. So you know him not for his wars, but he must have been a good warrior, otherwise how is it that it's always peaceful? People must have been really afraid to wage war with him, so that so you always hear about his yajnas and all these different things like that. He's known for that. Yudhishthira is known for that. You don't know, Yudhishthira is not known for his fighting prowess, so he's very good at it. He's the best in javelin, you know. So, but you don't hear Yudhishthira is for running a nice kingdom, you know, you hear like that. But Bhima, you think of him as a warrior. You know, so if it comes to a point of, you know, the fighting or not, then better Bhima fights or Karna fights. Karna would not be going according to his nature if he simply dealt in politics. And the Pandavas appreciated that him for that. They may not have liked him, but they respected him that he, as a Kshatriya, would not, you know, even though a Kshatriya can use politics, he'd prefer a more Kshatriya-compliant approach to fight. You don't like it, you fight. You directly tell them, I don't like what you're doing, I, you know, think that you shouldn't be here, I think I should be in charge, and so you have a fight, and may the best man win. You know, Karna was not a spoil sport, you know, except for when it came with Draupadi. You know, because she insulted him, and so therefore he didn't mind insulting her back. You know, he shouldn't have done that. But by his doing that, by his arranging that, destroyed him and Duryodhana and everyone connected. So if you want to know why Duryodhana and everyone was destroyed, it's because of what their insult to Draupadi. Not specific, I mean, Krishna arranged it, but it's that was the seed that opened the door to their destruction. Otherwise, if they hadn't insulted Draupadi, there's every chance they would have, you know, had to come to a reconciliation and go back to half of the kingdom. Yes.
Why did when Parda appeared first time and when they were displaying their, the Pandavas were displaying their prowess and all the Dharma students, and Parda challenged Arjuna to fight and Arjuna declined, or Drona declined for Arjuna on the basis that who's your parents, but if we say that Varna is not based on birth, or that Varna based on birth is a Saurik Varnashram and not Daivi Varnashram, then why would Drona and Arjuna and everyone accept that?
So what are you taking as the basis of the decision?
I'm asking you.
No. I'm saying, you have a doubt. What is the actual point of the doubt?
The doubt seems. It seems like they were saying because you're not a Kshatriya.
Because you're born in a Shudra family, therefore.
Yeah,
okay. So like that. Did they deal with Vidura as a Shudra? The same people. No, he was. Right. Now. So, what? How did Karna? Okay. Does a Kshatriya, in his being a Kshatriya, he has to pursue Dharma. One of the first points being made in the Dharma Shastra is respect for Shastra and respect for the authorities that give you the Shastras, right? The Guru. So, can someone actually be a real Kshatriya if they don't respect the Brahmins? No. And they don't respect the hierarchy of even within of Kshatriyas and all that. You know, he's just allowed not to do that. So we can see if someone like Kartavirya, Arjuna, Venu, technically they know the duties of a king, but they don't act right. So you don't call them in that way, even though technically they're Kshatriyas, but they're not what you call, means outside the Kshatriyas, inside they're not. That's the key to your question. How did Karna make his entrance into that assembly? Did he respect Drona and Kripa? No. Drona's running a guru. His students are graduated. He wants to show everybody what they know. If they're Brahmins, you don't have to do that. But as Kshatriyas, the people have to have faith that these people can take care of them. So one of the things is the strength of their arms, they can protect the kingdom. So you have to see their prowess, see their might, see their skills. Then the people will be impressed. The Kshatriyas will be impressed. The women of the family will be inspired, and so then they'll deal nicely. The common people, the Vaishyas will feel inspired, and now the place will be peaceful and all that. And the Shudras will feel inspired because, you know, here's someone who will take care of us like a father. Right? So everybody becomes inspired by that. Is there any other purpose? So it's very religious assembly. And even though they're showing prowess and chivalry and all this kind of thing, it's part of the Kshatriya mood. It's part of what people expect. People don't expect their king to be a wimp. You know, they expect them to have prowess and all that. So now they're doing that, and so everything's going religiously. Then this one person, just because he can't tolerate Arjuna, just suddenly walks in and he thinks it's his right to disregard the whole assembly, disregard everyone there, and why they're there, and, you know, and make this whole thing. Now, is that the mentality of Kshatriya? No. What is that the mentality of? Kshatriya. So that's why they dealt with him as a Sutta instead of as a Kshatriya. Because his mentality was that of a Sutta. Because you have to remember and hear is that this is why Varnashram is not, Varnashankar is not, recommended. But what is his parentage? What is Karna's parentage?
Well, really, he's the son of the king, the sun god.
Yes, who is a
Kshatriya.
And his mother was?
Kshatriya.
Yes, so in that way it's pure. So you see his activities are that. But was their alliance authorized? No. So it was without garbage, without any considerations like that. So human beings have to consider this. Demigods don't. Right? They're working on a different level. So he's a human being. So that means he's born below standard. So if you're not born with Garbhagan, you're automatically a Shudra. You understand? So by mentality, he'll have that. Why did his mother, why was she not willing to actually agree to the union between her and the sun god?
She wasn't married.
She wasn't married. It would be socially bad. It would, in other words, prestige. Why did the sun god demand the union?
Is it socially bad?
It would be socially bad. He is called by a mantra by this girl. Okay, a human girl. Okay, mantras are given to humans and only qualified, and she chanted in such a way it worked, so he came. So no one will complain that he went and had a liaison with a human based on that principle. But if he went, him, the sun god, you know, the one of the top gods of all the gods, he goes down there, he's rejected by this 12-year-old girl because, you know, it's not religious and he is the form of religion. How is that going to look to his friends? And don't think that they're not going to harass him. They will harass him. So he has to have this liaison with her. So what is the basis of his conception?
Pride.
Pride, social prestige. What is the one underlying thing you can always say about Karna that you know he's going to react to?
Insult.
This one thing. Yeah, insult, prestige. So you can see he's exactly as his parents conceived. So therefore, the Pandavas who know the science of that, they accept him. They don't complain that right after that Duryodhana, you know, based him and pronounces him the king of Anga. They don't complain. When he's on the battlefield and they're fighting, they don't mind fighting with him. You understand? But the point is his mentality is wrong, and they don't consider him worth considering in their who you're going to fight with. You understand? This is Varnashram's understood to this degree. The mentalities, the relationships, because Varnashram is relationship. We always take it as political or economic. No, it's not. Because even if you're going to take that, what happened to Kama and Moksha? Right? Why do we only take Dharma and Artha? And Dharma, we only take the political aspect of it, which technically is Artha. So actually, our whole approach to Varnashram is simply Artha. Why? Because that's how the bourgeois deal with it. Because what do we know? How many relate and identify with the kings of yesteryear and those things and yes and all that? How many read the books and relate more with those who have created the fraternity, equity, liberty? Who's that?
There's been some literature in the last 10 years or so. I forget the guy's name. But, you know, the basic bourgeois, liberal, you know, classical model of thinking, the Bentham and the, you know, those, was, you know, that if an adult person who's not insane will act rationally and toward their best interest or in furtherance of their artha. But I remember some English philosopher wrote a book where he said people don't really work like that. They're interested in doing something well, in having other people respect them. They're not just interested in making money or you know, in behaving in such a way only for their artha, but there's other elements of satisfaction in life. So this guy drew on other philosophers, you know, like some of those other philosophers, Rousseau, and you know, and he was saying that there's, you know, that we've got so much of the economists have us in this whole mentality of being rational money makers, and we'll exchange everything.
Because that's how it works. Because the point is, see, in a natural economy, and here we're defining natural meaning that you're dealing in goods that people naturally need. Because you need it. Like, does the man down at the corner that sells potatoes, does he have to advertise? No, because you need potatoes. But let us say the guy that is selling BMWs, does he have to advertise? Yes, because you don't need a BMW. Right? So in a natural economy, there's no need of advertisement, this, that, all these big overheads. You don't have to have a flash shop with all kinds of lights and a fancy building. You just have to have the goods and present them, you know, in a way that's attractive to a human being. You know what I'm saying? Very nice, like, cultural kind of things. You know, how they hang the cloth, they keep the spices, you know. You go to places that sell spices, they got them piled up in these impossible ways. And they know how to deal with it and take it out without the thing collapsing. It's unique, so it attracts the attention. You know, so therefore, if you're looking at all the guys that are selling turmeric, the guy that has is more nicely stacked it up, you'll buy from him because you figure he's better. He's more together. You know, so it's a human thing. You know, so there, they're just the modern economy, you have to push it so much because it's artificial. You don't require it, so they actually have to push it so much to get you to be involved. Because if you're not involved, it doesn't work. But in a natural economy, it works because you need it, so you will invest. You will invest like that. And so, yeah, so that makes the market work.
So the name of the guy was Bouton. I think he has a French name, but he's an English guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty is all relationships. That's what it comes back to. Because the guy is making billions of dollars and all that so that he can pick up, you know, some celebrity girl, and you know they can make it in, you know, his private jet, you know, at 30,000 feet. That's why he's doing it, not to have $1 billion. You know, because if he can't get any girls and no one wants to interact with him, come to his party, what's the use of his money? So it boils down to relationships. But in the process, people forget that. They forget that Varna and Ashram are connected. So they'll work in Varna at the exclusion of Ashram. And then they miss out, and so their relationships fall apart.
I don't want to monopolize the questions, but I had a whole other question.
You can try.
I'm interested in, you know, there's Dharma, Vedic Dharma Vidhi, and then there's Pancharatra Vidhi, and then Bhagavad Vidhi. And I'm interested in, you know, the relationship, the similarities, the distinctions and relationships.
Simple. Bhagavad Dharma is the Dharma of the spiritual world. So Sanatana Dharma is the religion of the spiritual world. So, and that means it's coming out of the spontaneous affection and love, you know, that you have for the Lord. So therefore, the activities will spontaneously happen. It means you have a relationship and you'll spontaneously act within that. Now, whether you act within that spontaneity of action within the field of rules and regulations or spontaneity, that's another thing. That makes it, but to give a flavor of that spontaneity. So now so the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, right? So the spiritual, that being reflected here, then that whole lifestyle that they live there, then does not become the natural, it is the natural lifestyle here without God consciousness. Now if you don't have, so the center, the spontaneity of the spiritual culture, of the Sanatana Dharma is Krishna. And your relationship with them. Now you reflect that here. The idea of the reflection is Krishna's left out. Or let's say, is in all probability can be left out, though technically he's not. Right? And so then how do you inspire that spontaneity to act within that same culture without God? Therefore, the Dharma, Artha, and Kama, and Moksha have to be your inspirations. Right? But actually, the inspiration is supposed to be God. And, you know, so that makes the Vedic culture. And so everything is there, just like everything's in the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, everything is connected to the Lord. But when you reflect that here, everything is there, but because the Lord is hidden in it, then you could think that it's a variety of all kinds of topics and levels of thinking. Right? You could have, you know, gross materialists who don't accept any authority, those who do, worshippers of the material energy, worshippers of various demigods expanding from that, worshippers of Shiva, worshippers of the Brahman, you know, people who are just, you know, complete, voidists, and then atheists on both camps, you know, or God, you know, they're God conscious, but, you know, don't actually consider that he's part of this place, you know, all kinds of, you can have all these mentalities. So everything is there in the Vedas. Now, if you want to make it specific, you want to bring that Vedic culture closer in an observable form. Because generally as is there, as you notice, the questions are all basically external. They're going, I can see it. That's so I'm confused rather than seeing deeper, seeing broader than that. So when Karna walks in, you see his mentality, not just his position, what he can do. You know what I'm saying? Seeing that guy. So to try to create understanding that the weakness of the living entity is not seeing that in that deep way. You only see how much you have to make it work for you. Is that then you create a form that is more obviously taking the Vedic a step closer to God. That's the Pancharatra. So the Pancharatra is all the rules and regulations and verses of the Vedas that they are directly dealing with God. Or are in support of directly dealing with God. Those being pulled out, that is the Pancharatra. So the Pancharatra is the essence of the Vedas. Right? So the Pancharatra, the Vedanta Sutta, the Chaturshloki, they're actually all non-different. Just their emphasis. One is on a philosophical presentation, and the other is on a more practically cultural through the form of worship or ritual expressing the same thing. So it's the essence of the Vedas. So though it's from the Vedas, it's actually in a higher position like that, because it's Ekayana, it's on the Lord, it's one focus. While the Vedas are, multiple, or can't be. So the Bhagavad is the highest, then the Pancharatra, then the Vedas. So by following to follow any of this, unfortunately, you need qualification. Now, so Pancharatra being based on Vedic requires material qualification. So, and for people who don't quite have that, so we see in the Dwapara Yuga and the Kali Yuga, this is where they're applied. So at least in this time, that the problem comes is that Dwapara Yuga means 50% of good qualities are gone. Kali Yuga means 75% are gone. So that means you're already working at a disadvantage. So then the system then works because of its connection to the Bhagavad. So by practicing the Bhagavad, that's why in this age the Pancharatra won't work on its own. Last age it can, because people are qualified enough to take up worship, and by worshiping the Supreme Lord, then they get the rest of their qualifications. But in Kali Yuga, they don't. So through Harinam Sankirtan, you actually qualify yourself as a human being. Being qualified as a human being, then you can take up Pancharatra, which will then regulate your human life to keep you from going back into any kind of nonsense. So it is the Vedic that we can follow. Right? Then that becomes the support of the Bhagavad. So if one is satisfied in that, in other words, if one is satisfied with brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, and brahminical occupation, you can stick with Pancharatra and do nothing else, which is what Prabhupada gave in the beginning. So when devotees say Prabhupada didn't give varnashram, he gave it, but he gave it on that Pancharatric level, that it's only the brahminical consideration. But when he's saying I have to establish varnashram here, then it means that it has to be, you have to introduce Kshatriya Vaishya-Shudra. Like that. Because they're a package. Because, you can't just, after that, okay, we'll only introduce Kshatriya and Vaishya, forget the Shudra part. They're a package. Because brahminical means the nature of Brahman. This is the natural position of the soul. So the soul, in its conditioned state, can be here, but working progressively to get himself out of here because he understands he's Brahman. So that's the brahminical culture. That's the brahminical occupation. So you can do that. So you could just be involved in the temple programs, preaching deity worship and like that. Because our lifestyle that we live is Pancharatra. It's not Bhagavad. It's like Pancharatra. And so then, if there's consideration where the elements of grihastha life need to go beyond that, one's economics has to go beyond that, then to do that, that requires administration, more money, and more people to support it. So that means you have to introduce Kshatriya Vaishya-Shudra. So then that comes in, but it should be based on the principles of the Bhagavad and the Pancharatra. So we go into the Vedic as much as need to be to catch those things that are distracting us from our engagement in Pancharatra and Bhagavad. Not more than that. So if devotees go, oh, well, this is there, it's Vedic. So Vedic has that. Veda means everything. So you catch those things that are useful, that are recommended by the acharyas, that have been shown by the great personalities that they follow. Those things then you introduce. Then it works. Does that make sense? So that's the relationship.
Pancharatna is a sandhi between the Bhagavad and the Vedic.
It's a Sunday between, you could say in one sense it is, but it's its own position, because it is the essence of the Vedas. So you have the Vedas, that means everything's in it. Then you have of someone who's following the Vedas who wants to go back to Godhead. Then what would that Vedic lifestyle look like? That's Pancharatra. Right? But it deals with those direct things, because you buy bangles for your wife, or nice saris, or you take care of your kids. That you don't have to explain in Pancharatra, because as a human being, you're already following those aspects from Varnashram. So you don't have to; those don't have to be brought in. But those, the mentality of it, why you're doing it, has to be from Pancharatra and Bhagavad. You know what I'm saying? But if you want to do that, that's explained in Vedic. Vedic will explain all these little details. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Is there a present in society?
Is there at present or a present?
At present.
At present, okay.
You spoke about, Marks and Spencer, their virtues, and the government, the kshatriyas, but you never spoke about any Brahmins in the present society.
You take someone, I don't know who's in there now, but let's say someone before, who could, basically you could say in one sense had a very great influence on the world economy. You had this guy, I think it was Alan Greenspan. So he's the minister of the government for dealing with economics. So he makes the policies for America and the policies of how America deals with the world. So in one sense, at least previously controlled the world economics. He's a Brahmin. He doesn't do it himself, but he understands the system better than anyone on the planet. So he can say, you put your money here and take it out of there, and he'll can tell you what will happen in the way of the economics, the politics, the people themselves, everything. It's like that.
It's not like a clever Shudra or someone.
No, no. Shudras wouldn't be able to do that. Shudras know the art. He knows the science. So people understand the science behind it. Your professors at the university and all that, they're Brahmins. Doctors who are doing it because of the science of medicine, if they're doing it simply because of the money and that was their whole influence, they just do as much, they never become specialists generally. But like that, they're Brahmins. Generally, most of the times, those who are really good at the law, they're Brahmins. Ones that do it as a business and all that, but you'll find that they'll do law, get good at it enough that they hire people and set up a firm. So much of the time, those guys are Vaishyas, but not always.
What about the lifestyle that Brahman lives? How is he in his daily life from morning till he goes to sleep at night? Does this count in his qualifications?
Of course, but the point is you're asking how to see it. So the point is that one's lifestyle and one's occupation should match. So the difficulty is in the modern culture, Prabhupada says, Varnashram is going on. You still have your intellectuals, your administrators, your business person, your common, your general public. But it's unscientific. So the lines between them is not clear. So therefore, Vaishyas, let's say they open a hospital. They do it as a business. They open a hospital. So what do they hire? They hire Brahmins and Shudras. Right? They hire people to manage the hospital in the money side. They hire people to manage, the nurses and all the different things that are there. They hire, Brahmins as doctors to be hired there. So the problem is it's out of place, because medicine should be something that's for the benefit of everybody, but it's turned into a money-making thing. So therefore, it's very difficult to have good medical attention. So to do that, then you would have to have insurance, which is another aspect of the Vaishyas, right, of economics. So then in this way, they're controlling the whole thing. This is out of balance. So it creates a disturbance, because the Vaishyas control areas they should not be controlling. Everything needs money, but that doesn't mean they can control it, because everything also needs religion. Otherwise, they can see now their whole system is falling apart. The amount of lethargy that people have to be involved in economics, the amount of people who don't see any inspiration that they can get anywhere in society. Like previously, you had immigrants from around the world would come and land somewhere in America. Like they land in New York and there'd be a quarter that's just Italians or Poles or this or that. And they would have faith that if I become part of the system, I can move up in this system and become well-to-do. I can make my, you know, I can.
Move up in life.
Yeah, move up in life. And previously, they did. They'd move in, and with time, given I don't know how many years, with time, they'd move out. Then another group would move in, and then that quarter would be known by that. And then they'd move out. But now people don't move out. Why? Because they have no faith that they can move up and make themselves something in the system. So therefore, they don't have money. They get into things that they shouldn't get into. And so therefore, the economics is very, very much burdened. So their system of monopolizing things, controlling something, so in their idea, the ultimate perfect state of just controlling won't work because it's not God conscious. It doesn't consider, you know, the artha, you know, kama and moksha elements of the need of human society.
And same
so it fails. It's unscientific. It's working on Vaishya principles, but it's unscientific because it's not complete. That's why you need Varnashram. But it's not that they don't do there. It's not that the administrators aren't controlling the countries. You know, it's not that the intellectual fields aren't controlled by intellectuals. It's going on, but it's not scientific. You know, knowledge should be known for it's there. But then somebody comes up with a great thing. He figures out how to run a car off of seawater. They have. You just take water and just put it into your tank and drive off. But that won't work very nice for your big motor company. So then they go and buy it from him, and you never hear of it again. You look, you know, every month or every week or whatever it is, you see in Newsweek time, they come up with all these new inventions. And sometimes they're talked about for a little while, and then after years, they're nothing. Why? Because somebody bought it, because then it won't make money. You know what I'm saying? So they're making this whole thing about having, you know, the environment, this and that, and they have so many answers already. But because it's being controlled for money, it's out of balance. So the problem here is not, oh, those guys are controlling this, that, and we get ourselves all inspired by this kind of, you know, thing, which devotees love to do. That's not the point. The point is it's not God's system. That's why it's out of balance. So the problem is they're making out of balance by these things. So that means you have to bring it in line with God conscious. You don't keep that aspect of, you know, all these things and conspiracies and all these kind of, and get yourself all dumped up and not bring God into it. Otherwise, what's the use? So the point is, as we were discussing before, is the inspiration. So the inspiration is supposed to be pleasing God. Therefore, we follow God's system. So people are following the system inherently because that's just the way human beings work. But it's unscientific because each person will take it out of balance. Now the Vaishyas are making it out of balance. You go back, you know, hundreds, thousands of years, the Kshatriyas are always making it out of balance. And now and again, then if the Brahmins got in control, they make it out of balance. You know, so it's because they don't know God consciousness. They don't understand Varnashram. They're not understanding, you know, how to actually please God. So they take religion as something that you can actually practice and not be God conscious. This is like, example, you can be a good Jew and be an atheist. Believe it or not. You can.
Can you be a Brahmin and be an atheist?
By lifestyle and occupation, yes. I met one Brahmin who was, at the time when I met him, the head pujari of a major temple in India. I mean major temple. You know, like a Tirupati level kind of temple. He said until he was 30, he was an atheist. He was born into this Brahmin family. And they were, you know, and they had always been, you know, major priests in the temple for, you know, hundreds of years. And for the first 30 years, he was an atheist. And then one day during one Abhishek, he realized God's there. And after that, he became very serious. So he was a good Brahmin. But he's not on the level. That's why it's like Kapila Muni gave that level before of human beings. You know, in other words, you know, he went through all even the animals, which is better than the other, depending upon, you know, what are their senses and how they perceive things and everything like that. So it goes up, and then you have the human being. So human's better than the animals. Better than human is one who's, you know, studied the Vedic literatures. Of that, then a Brahmin. Of that, one who then practices it. But then better than that is one who actually understands until you get to the devotee. So there's all kinds of levels before you get to devotee. So you can be, like the smarter Brahmins in India, so they're real Brahmins. You know, we'll say the bad mouth, that's that, but they're real Brahmins. You can't badmouth them. You can say that their lifestyle, without being God conscious, that's a waste. But they're real Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? That's why Varnashram has to be approached. It's not with some kind of simplistic mentality. The problem is we're taking it that the Western is very developed and sophisticated and the Vedic is very simplistic. It's actually the opposite. The Western has developed to some degree. In some areas there is some sophistication, but not to the level that the Vedic offers, because they can't look at multiple levels at once. They'll find one perspective that they try to explain everything from. And depending upon who they are, they're more expert or less. But that's why always your Vedic philosophies are easy to defeat. They defeated by each other. And one moves on, and then they go on. But in the Vedic, one is what Western has ever defeated one. And two, within India, even one defeats the other, it still remains. Because the depth of it is so much greater. Still, it doesn't get to the level of God consciousness. That's why then God consciousness has to be. So if you understand God consciousness and you understand the Vedic literature, what don't you have? Since the Vedas are everything in this world, and God consciousness is everything of the other three-quarters portion of the cosmic creation. In other words, you have the mentality of three-quarters of the living entities in the cosmic creation, right? And you have their reflected lifestyle as the Vedas, which means technically you have everything complete, right? Then from there, then you combine those two of why you won't go back to Godhead. If you have the mentality of those in the spiritual world, live the lifestyle of those in the spiritual world, why wouldn't you go back to Godhead? So we're professing we're going to live a lifestyle that supposedly is based on the mentality of the residents of the spiritual world, which therefore manifests the external form of their culture, Sanatana Dharma in the spiritual world. But we're going to ignore that. We're simply going to take the mentality, and supposedly that's going to not even give us the reflection of that culture in the material world, but something else that, you know, I grew up with in my little out-of-the-corner way of the part of the world. And somehow or another, those two are going to match nicely. And the problem is if you have enough intelligence to make them match, you have enough intelligence to understand Varnashram. And if you don't have, if you can't understand Varnashram, you don't have the intelligence to make those two match. It means spiritual consciousness and, you know, your mundane form of lifestyle. You won't have the intelligence, because you require finer intelligence to match them, which every devotee has, but unfortunately chooses not to use. Right? Scientists wonder, what is that other 9/10 of your brain for? This is what it's for. Like that. You only need 1/10 of your brain to understand the mechanics of this world. You need 9/10 to understand how it connects to God. Right? Because God's a little bigger than around here. Is that okay?
What are primary school teachers, by the way?
It depends. They could be anything. Now, why is a primary school teacher a primary school teacher? Putting aside the fact that they would like to be a university lecturer, but they don't have the degree, okay? But a primary school teacher, why would one choose that field? Because of the relationships with the kids. You're teaching some, and the relation with the kids. If, you know, you have a lecture at a university, 300 students are in your class. How much relationship do you have? You can cultivate a few, but it's not. But if you have, you know, especially the lower grades, you have more relations, you and the kids. You understand? So, generally the reason that someone is a primary school teacher is because of that relationship with kids. Right? So you'll see that's why generally most primary school teachers are ladies. Most are, because relationships are more important to them. And the higher you go in the academic, then the more prominently it's met. Because it's not based on relationships, more is more on the science. Right? So now, then you have to see is then, what is the base? So that will be there generally because of being a woman. So you want to do something in which relationships will be there. So at the house, that's based on relationships. So if you go to school, it's still, you can make it based on relationships. So it works. It works for the ladies. Does that make sense? Now, behind that, so in that way, you don't actually have to go farther than that. Because in the Varnashram system, you have the Varnas, you have the Ashrams, then you have ladies. Right? So wherever they fit in, that works. It's not a major discussion. So just that's their impetus for doing it, that's enough. Like that. Does that make sense? But if one wants to take it further, then they can look at it. Is it the science of education that is their drive? And therefore they use the art of education to teach the children and get them to respond because they're kids. So you use the art in one way. If they're teenagers, you use it in a different way. They're adults, you use it in a different way. So there'll be a different art for those levels. But the common element is the science of education. You know, one is an educator. Or is it simply that it's an art you can relate to? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it means teaching English is an art. Communication and language is a science, but generally what we teach in school is the art form. We don't teach the science form. You know what I'm saying? And generally you'll see is most lady teachers aren't mathematicians. They're more into language and other arts and history and these things that deal more with the human interactive, like that. Because the interest is more in the relationship and in the art. You know what I'm saying? So that way then one can position oneself. So it's not a problem. Since English is an art, basically by definition, then if a lady who is an artist teaches it, it's not a problem. Because you can learn arts from artists. You know what I'm saying? You want to learn music, you go to an artist to learn. If you're a Brahmin, there's a Brahmin who that's their science, you'd learn from him. Because then you'll start from the science and work back into the art. But if you just want to know music, then you can learn from an artist. It doesn't matter. Kshatriya Brahmins can learn from Shudras an art. You wouldn't learn from a Shudra a science. You know? You wouldn't learn, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's not a problem. So one could be an artist in the Vedic system and be respected. That's the point, is that you have knowledge. Knowledge is respected. So a school teacher is respected for their knowledge. But it doesn't necessarily make them a Brahmin. You know, just like, let's say, in your family, you have someone who has more knowledge. They're respected for that.
What makes them a Brahmin?
What makes them a Brahmin? I said is that approach, is that it's a science, and that knowledge, and that you're distributing knowledge, rather than it is art and interaction. That makes the difference. So, technically speaking, if you're dealing with women, it doesn't matter. If you're dealing with men, then you'd make a distinction. But with women, it's not necessary to make the distinction. Yes?
What if some lady actually has an interest in the science of the things, not in the relationship?
That's fine. So then that she may be brahminical by nature. I'm just saying how you can tell the difference. Sometimes Kshatriya women will do it because it's something to keep them busy, and there's the element of organization and control. So it means if it's brahminical, it'd be according to some science like that, and it won't be, yeah. If it's kshatriya, it'll be the organization. If it's vaishya, she'll be looking at the monetary element of it. If it's shudra, she's looking at the artistic element. But as a woman, they'll all look at it from the element of relationship. You know what I'm saying? So you can have all four. That's why varnashram is so subtle. See, now the problem comes here is the subtleties that we're talking about here will both not be understood by two groups concerning varnashram, those that support it and those that oppose it. Those that support it, then it goes out of their realm of that. Well, that's not varnashram because they can only see the gross. Because you're getting into not only into the subtleties of what they claim themselves to be liberal and special and intellectual for, but taking it so far beyond it they've never even thought about these things in their life. Don't even know concepts like that exist. Then those who are advocates of varnashram, they won't like these explanations either, because it's not the external that they can see.
It's out of the box.
Yeah, it's out of the box. And so they don't support it either. So real varnashram is not appreciated by those who push varnashram or by those who oppose it. Real varnashram is something else. It both has all the good qualities that each one are looking for in their reason for supporting and opposing. But they can't access it because they're not willing to go that stage, or they don't know that you should go to that degree. You understand? Because I've seen it both. As soon as you bring this up, immediately someone who's supportive of Varna Ashram, no, women don't have a Varna, or bang, there's no, but then they're working outside of the thing, you can't mix things. They always have those. And the other one says, no, but what about, you know, this and that? And you can go however intellectual they want to go and how subtle and fairy-airy they want to go. We can take that and keep going. So both parties get left in the dust, because the only approach is through Krishna consciousness, understanding how this is God's creation. The creation works according to God's laws. Therefore, Varnashram works. They're trying to come in from the economic or political or social or all these isms. And they're all situated in Pranamoy, every last one of them. I've met only a couple of people who work from the platform of Dharma. You know, are coming in from that angle. And they're more willing to listen to the philosophy, but they got to deal with all the other ismites, and so they tend to ignore it. Does that make sense? So like that. So Varnashram is a very, very scientific. It answers everybody's questions, everybody's doubts. Everyone can be comfortable with it, because everybody has a position. According to General Varnashram, your mother is more, is 10 times more, is, you owe more of a debt to your mother than your father, 100 times more. But as far as the social status, the father is in a superior position than the mother. But what is owed to the mother is much greater than the father. Like that. So depending upon what vision you're looking at, it's like that. And then therefore, is that then the teacher, then if they're teaching ordinary subject matter, like that, then the father would be 10 times more respectable than them. But not that they're not respected for the knowledge, but it's there. If they're teaching like science, like that, then they're equal to the father. But if they're teaching lifestyle, actual devotional lifestyle, how to be a devotee, how do you apply this in your life, how to apply the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in your life, then they're more respectable than both the mother and father. So it just depends upon what's the perspective, what's the level. You know what I'm saying? So that's the consideration. Is that Veda has an answer to everything. It's just a matter of going deep enough into it to be able to find those. But if we keep it shallow and then claim it doesn't, you know, then you're using give a dog a bad name and hang him. You know, just first of all say, oh, it's not liberal, so it's not good, and then find reasons why it's not good. That's easy to do. I mean, if we really wanted to find out reasons not to, you know, follow different things than that, why do we have to go to a philosopher? We go to common men, right? Because they have no entrance, and they come up with even more reasons. You know what I'm saying? Why waste your time on an intellectual who's not actually in touch with the reality of what's going on in the world anyway? Of course, he reads his books, thinks he is, but then there's something else. You know, the only books you can read and actually be in touch without actually experiencing it is the Vedic literature. Modern literature is built on someone's experience. So he'll give you examples that then you can get the same knowledge by experience. Does that make sense? Somehow now we've gone way beyond the time. So I don't know if it's still here, but a quickie for these persons on the here. So this is from Chennai. Right? If everything happens under the law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why so many irreligious activities are happening in this material world, right? This is
the atheist viewpoint.
Yeah, this is the deist viewpoint. Is it due to misuse of free will? Does this mean all the material developments, ignoring the spiritual Vedic culture, are atheism? How do we devotees relate to all these? The basic principle is that the world is meant for religious activities, but for it to function, the other has to be there. Everything that it functions then has its has both sides. Both work together. You have dark, you have lightness, you have light, you know, they go together. So They're there, so it's our choice. So God creates the world, and then depending upon the living entity, he can either follow God's laws or not. That's his independent choice. If he wants to get out of the material world, of course, you have to follow God's laws. If you want to stay here, you don't have to follow. That's the easy part. So staying is easy. Giving out is, you know, takes a little bit more consciousness. Then, so therefore, it's like that. It's due to misuse. And then the material developments, then they're based on atheism, but what works about them is whatever works as close to the Vedic rule. It means businessmen make money because they buy things cheaper than they sell them. But that's a Vedic law. Like, economics is created by God. Dharma, artha, kama, and moksha is created by God. So therefore, all the principles of this, these are there. Every culture has economics. Every culture has some concept, let's say, the family unit or parenthood. Nobody asks, children don't ask, what's a mommy or what's a daddy? You know what I'm saying? These are common questions. They ask, why is the sky blue and this and that? Because they've been in species of life where you can't see colors. So naturally, they'll ask, why is it blue? But every species of life, there's always a mommy and daddy. They don't ask. Families, they don't ask about that. They ask about other things. They may ask about details or duties or this, but concepts, they don't. Nobody asks, why are there, you know, only five senses and sense objects? Why do we have to be restricted to five? You know, why five? Make it simple. Make it only one. Or why one? Why not ten? Nobody says anything about that. Nobody is worried about that. Right? Is anybody jumping up and down this nonsense that, you know, people have sex and they find it pleasurable? Is anybody making it a crusade about that? No, people are happy. We eat food. It has taste. Nobody's complaining. Why? Because this is how God's created it. So nobody minds it. The point is that now do they want to take it further? So they just want to be control and enjoy it. Therefore, then they do. So what works is because it actually works according to God's law. And what doesn't work is because it's against God's law. So that's like that. So devotees are related like that. God's law is there. People follow it, don't follow it. They follow it, they get good result. They don't follow it, they get bad result. But if you want to get eternal result, then you got to follow it in connection to God. Then, if you want to spread Krishna consciousness, this is from Orlando. If you want to spread Krishna consciousness, can society be changed by grassroots revolution or top-down changes? Right? Always it has to be one or the other. The point is if the people in general don't take it up, how will it be followed? But if the leaders don't lead in that way, how will the general people take it up? So ultimately, as you have that, you're going to work on creating leadership that understands a position. And so then in that position of understanding, they'll be able to actually lead the society in a God-conscious way. So you have to have that. At the same time, it's because it's the science of self-realization. Is you can be self-realized whether the rest of the society follows or not. Lord Chaitanya, in Navadi, they were practicing the Sankirtan movement. The government was Muslim. Right? A Muslim is not known to be super hot on being, you know, Hindu-supportive. Right? But they were fine. There was no complaint about it. The only complaint they had about the government was not get rid of the government, but no, allow us to do Sankirtan. So as long as they didn't bother the Sankirtan, who cares who's in charge? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So ultimately, is two things have to go on. So the grassroots doesn't mean a grassroots movement as such, a political movement. Grassroots means the individuals themselves are trying to become God conscious. When those individuals are trying to become God conscious, that automatically is grassroots. At the same time, simultaneously, you have to be training your leaders. The leaders are leading appropriately, and the individuals are trying to follow, that will make it work. Right? But if you can get the leadership to understand that, great. If they not, then if the individuals become God conscious, they with time will become the leaders, then they'll do it. Prabhupada said is that, you know, this movement will go on. It's just a matter of who gets the credit, that's all. It's not a matter of if it's going to go on or not. It is going to go on. Now, if we want to take part and get credit, or if we want to sit by and have little meetings and decide whether, you know, the prophet's instructions and God's details of what we want to follow, or whether there's something else, or we're new, unique, we're different. But then to say we're unique and different don't fit into God's paradigm, say that then we have to believe in a realm that's not under God's control. So that would basically mean we would have to be within the Judaic or derivative of Judaic tradition. We couldn't bring up that platform from another platform. It would have to be those kind of religious leanings, because only they have this idea that God is the creator of the world, but somehow or another doesn't control it, somebody else does. So in most religionist case, then their ideas, that would be Satan. Amongst the Hindus, then they'll think is Shakti, some form of Durga or that. And for the first world people, then they'll somehow or another claim that's America. Of course, the British may disagree, but hey, there's only 55 million, so they're in the minority, so America wins. Okay?
Yeah, there's one thing that Chanakya mentioned, that the kingdom actually, it doesn't depend on the king, it depends on self-control.
Self-control, yes.
Rajamulam India Jaya, that's what he says, not king.
That's right, self-control.
Yeah, everybody's self-control, kingdom will run properly. Not that,
yeah,
but the king can do.
Yeah, the king can do. He has to be self-controlled, and the people have to be self-controlled. If he's self-controlled, then he'll follow the shastras and create the environment in which people will be self-controlled. And if they're not self-controlled yet, you can't, how do you run it? It's just like you see in major cities, much of the time there's an area of the town, the police don't even go inside. They'll go around the outside of it, make sure whoever's in there doesn't come out. But they won't go inside, because their point is they can't control it, because nobody is self-controlled enough. So as long as they bother each other, they're shooting each other, who cares? But if they come out and shoot someone, then we have a problem. So it's the same principle. If people aren't self-controlled, so that's why the Kshatriyas are very worried about establishing the Vedic culture, because it's the only thing that will make people self-controlled. Otherwise, like Prabhu was saying, is that you have these philosophers that come up, the people just naturally, out of the goodness in their heart, are going to be nice and good. So that's nice, that's positivism, it's a type of materialism. But the problem is it doesn't always work, so therefore you get these schools of pessimism comes up, because people don't do it. Right? And then other people get more pragmatic, that they just get down to the mechanics of the material world and just get into a purely economic viewpoint, that are all stemming from people didn't follow that. They didn't because they were going to do nice and therefore everything ran nice. And so people get disturbed by that. And so they come up with other philosophies like that. But it's a natural thing. The principles, people will start from the principle of materialism. I'm born from this materialism, my consciousness comes from here, everything comes from here, so if I work nicely, if I deal with it nicely, I will enjoy. Now the problem comes, if I only work for myself, I will get, but there's other people that have the same problem, there'll be a fight. So if I say, work for everyone's benefit, and that's my motto, other people will get on board, and you can create a world movement. Right? You can create a world movement, it has to have two elements to it. One, selfless work, working for the benefit of others, and the second is there has to be some variety of supreme. Right, that. If you have those two elements, you can create a world movement. If you don't have those two elements, it'll never get beyond the rooms of the intellectuals. Like that. So, seeing that, so it works, and it goes, and everybody's inspired, but then people don't always work like that, it falls apart. So then your opposite side, your pessimism comes up. Well, it's not here anyway, you can't be happy here. So therefore, just get what you can and get out of here. And so that gives rise to, therefore, extinguishing the soul. So because the pessimist words, like when you die, it's all over anyway. Or if you're a little more broad-minded, you have a few lifetimes, and then you work it out, but you're not involved here, so there's no karma. It's a matter of whether they accept karma or not. They don't accept karma, body's finished, you're done. You're out of here, so you're happy. And the other one is that, okay, it may take a few lifetimes, but then you'll be disentangled from material of karma and material engagement. Then you'll be out of here because you won't exist anymore. But both of them, the problem is if you don't exist, why do you claim you'll be happy? Right? You say, I'm happy because I exist. If I don't exist, how will I know I'm happy? Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. How do I know I don't exist? So like that. So it's a problem. So both of these schools will go back and forth a little bit, you know, idealism, okay, then it's all ideas, everything's ideas, you know, you get quantum physicists and other things like that. It's only ideas, it's just perceptions and all these things, and they don't see the dead matter. They see only the dead matter. They don't see the subtlety and all this and that. So they go on fighting and fighting and fighting, but they all miss the point. When they get completely sick of this and completely freaked out that neither system worked, then they take up monotheism. Right? The soul, just out of fear, takes up monotheism, and the whole system is based on fear. That's the underlying element why they do it. But in it, since they're still looking from the mundane concepts of karma and beyond, it's because of those two they take it up. Both those are still present within monotheism. So God can't be in control of this world, because if he's all good, why is bad happening? So therefore they have to deify him and keep it at his distance. So someone else has to be in control. You know, they usurped the power, they took control. But how is that possible? God's the all-powerful. How does one of his angels take over the material world? You know, you think you can't do better than that, you know? It's like, you know, God doesn't have any way to take care of it. You know, like that, you know. So, like that, because then that explains how God's not involved, and so he can still be nice and I can still love him even though my son just died and he shouldn't have. You know, so stuff like that. So you can go on in life, you know. So you do like that. But at the same time, and so that's left from there. And so therefore, by dealing with the material energy, by being nice and good, then I will be happy. And how will that be? God will reward me. I'll be happy by the material things eternally. So me and my family will go to heaven. We'll all be together and like this and that. And, you know, my daughter can sit around and cuddle with the, you know, the talking lions and all this and that. I'm not sure what the boys do. You only see pictures of the girls with the cuddly lions. You never see the boys doing something. You know, they go off and, you know, say stick the girls, you know, pigtails and ink wells. What do they do, you know, in heaven? You know, they don't talk about it. So, in other words, it's just material life that doesn't end. You don't have to worry about birth, death, old age, and disease. It's just what is going on now very nicely and all that. I wonder if you still have your brutal pearl refrigerator and washing machine and all that. They don't say, you know, like that. So that goes on. But at the same time, on the other side, then God has no form, no this, no that. He just on and on and that, what he doesn't have. You know, so it's a combination of both. So that's the problem is with these things, is that it's only a combination. So God consciousness has to be the root. Through the process of God consciousness, you have to create real leaders. Real leaders will then make it, organize it, and make it dynamic. Like that. So in that way, then it works. So good qualities are the only way it can function. So if they're not pushed, and good qualities doesn't mean moralism, means God consciousness. Moralism comes from God. It's a derivative of God consciousness. You know, it's like, you know, 5 rupees is a derivative of 100 rupees. So here you have people saying, no, we only have to work with the 5 rupees and 2 rupees because that's the real thing. That's what we deal with on the street. You know, that's the only thing that's really going on. This 100 rupee nonsense, we don't need that. You know, and then they're opposing that. No, 100 rupees has 5 rupees in it. 10 rupees in it. This is what we're discussing. Those people who don't understand Varnashram is the 100 rupees. And everything that they got in modern culture is already there. If it wasn't, how is it Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so successful? How is it was that Srila Prabhupada was so successful? In fact, more successful than anyone in our movement at the present day. Why? Because Prabhupada follows the Vedic culture, that's why. Because it's universal. You know. Because then you have to, yeah, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the end of that. Just for contemplation, if they really wanted to be up-to-date and modern, then I heard one senior devotee said, actually, Calcutta is on the cutting edge of the world cities, because give it an X amount of time, all the cities of the world will look like Calcutta. So by that logic, if you can make it in Calcutta, you can make it in the rest of the world. So actually, if these people who were saying that, you know, really believed that the modern culture had something to add, they'd all be sitting in Calcutta and getting trained up. But the unfortunate thing is every last one of them, this side of the world, is where they just will not sit down. Guaranteed, they will not sit down in Mayapur and Calcutta. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Swami Deva Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, Sai Sai Gaura Prema Nandini.